In the pantheon of great human inventions lies the greatest of all life-saving inventions, the vaccine. No other medical invention has relieved human suffering to the extent vaccines have. Welcome to Vancouver Current Worldwide. My name is Ray Talili. Joining us from the great province of Alberta in Canada is Spencer Alexander.
Good day, Ray. Great to be here, mate.
Vaccines have had the single biggest impact on reducing child mortality rates as well as preventing lifelong disabilities.
Agreed. And don't forget, honorable mention should also go to anesthesia for its role in reducing human suffering also.
Good point. Perhaps we should do a show on greatest inventions. How's that Japanese sex bot of yours coming along?
Yeah, man, you're never going to let that go. She's coming along not bad. All right, no, stop. Really, seriously, for the public record, I do not own a Japanese sex bot, just so you know. There you go.
Sure. Okay. Now that we've cleared that up, inoculation against smallpox, one of the worst diseases to afflict humanity, with a 30% kill rate, not to mention others that were left blind or scarred, was already practiced in parts of China, India, Turkey, and North Africa, going back many centuries before the practice made its way from Constantinople and into Europe in the 1700s. By 1796, Edward Jenner had perfected the technique.
Wow. But Ray, wasn't there a woman before Jenner that pioneered inoculations in the UK in the 1700s?
There was. Very good. Her name was actually Lady Montague. She pioneered variolation, I think the word is, yeah, variolation, which she was visiting some 60 years before Jenner's invention. She had seen in Constantinople how the locals would literally scrape off the actual smallpox, the pus off the smallpox, onto an open cut. She did it for her kids, so I can't remember if it was her daughter or her son. And it worked. And, you know, 4 days later, the child would get a bit of a fever, and then that was it. They were kind of immunized. So she brought this technique back to England, and it took off quite well there for a bit. But then it got a little out of control, I think, is what happened. And so it kind of like died away. Then plus there was all this discrimination. She was female, all these kind of other reasons that made it difficult for her to get more recognition for that.
Yeah, that time, that would be about right, 1700s, yeah.
What Jenner did, he kind of took it to another level. So she actually took the actual smallpox and put the actual smallpox onto like an open cut. What Jenner thought it was a good idea to scrape some pus off a milkmaid's cowpox-infested hand and apply it onto a boy's open cut. Now, cowpox is similar to smallpox, but far less lethal or contagious. Turned out to be a fantastic idea. 6 weeks later, when the boy was exposed to smallpox and a further 20 times later, he was fully immunized. The word vaccine was thus derived from the Latin word vacca, meaning cow. His method was perfected further, and by 1980, the World Health Organization declared smallpox officially eradicated, the only disease to be eradicated so far from the face of the earth.
Wow, that's a great human success story. Did you know that at least, the last two remaining smallpox samples are held in labs, one in Russia and one in the US.
Yes, I did know that actually. It is interesting.
Get this. There are some concerns about ancient diseases that have long been buried in the permafrost. These ancient diseases might reappear as a result of the thawing permafrost due to global warming. It's not just ancient diseases like anthrax, tetanus, and botulism that can lie dormant and reemerge after 100,000 years. Recently defeated ones like smallpox could also reemerge. There is an example of a village in Siberia that lost 40% of its population in the 1890s to smallpox. The villagers then took those unfortunates that had passed and they buried them in the upper layer of the permafrost on the banks of the Cloma River. The thawing and the riverbank's erosion are obviously a cause of concern. There are many such burial sites, you know, across the globe with various small villages that people have passed with, like smallpox and others, that will now become, given what we're going through, global warming, that now become a valued threat, like a real threat to us.
You're kidding. That's like zombie pathogens.
Yeah.
Human and animal. It's fascinating and scary. One can't discuss the history of vaccines without mentioning Louis Pasteur or Maurice Hilleman. Pasteur, of course, was the French biologist who in 1885 saved the life of a boy who had been bitten by a rabies-infected dog, a rabid dog, as they say. Over the next 2 weeks, he injected the boy with a weakened form of rabies. The boy developed an immunity, and so was born the first non-smallpox vaccine, the rabies vaccine.
Yeah. Did you know that rabies is a big killer globally? It kills up to 60,000 people annually, mostly in Asia and Africa. But unfortunately, most of these, again, are through dog bites, are the principal cause. But all kinds of animals, as you know, can carry rabies. Ray, when were most of the vaccines we receive now, when were they invented? How recent are those?
Vaccines were developed for the most common childhood diseases relatively recently. Whooping cough, or pertussis as it's called, in 1914. Diphtheria, 1926. Tetanus, 1938. Influenza in 1945. Mumps in 1948. Polio in 1955, measles in 1963, and rubella in 1969. Mm. By the year 2000, huge progress had been made, with the biggest obstacle to universal vaccine coverage being the cost of vaccines for developing countries. The HPV vaccine is the most recent one, available since 2006. That has been added to the list of must-haves, which is good to hear, as that's the most common STD, or STI as it's called nowadays. Hey, is Banff still the STI capital, or is it Fort McMurray?
Yeah, very funny. It's actually Whistler, and it's them outsiders that be bringing that in. It's not homegrown. The financial hurdle you were just speaking about, regarding universal vaccine coverage, has been greatly diminished by philanthropic organizations like Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The drive to create access to vaccines in the developing world has been highly effective. There are now also major private/public partnerships like CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation, to develop and accelerate vaccine development for the new and emerging threats. CEPI was created created at Davos in 2017, more out of necessity than anything else, shortly after the Ebola breakout.
Yeah, those evil elites doing good for the world. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is amazing. Why do people have a problem with Bill Gates and other do-gooders like the World Health Organization? I don't get it. Anyways. Now, Maurice Hilleman doesn't have the name recognition of Pasteur yet, but what an extraordinary man if there ever was one. Born on a farm in Montana in 1919, his contributions to vaccine science are staggering. By the time of his death in 2005, he had developed more than 40 vaccines.
That's incredible. What a testament to his life. Like, those 40 vaccines. I wonder, how many lives has he and his team have actually saved, you know, due to those vaccines?
I actually happen to know that fact. it's estimated that annually it's 8 million lives are owed to him annually. And it's also argued that he is the human being who has possibly saved the most lives out of any other like human being.
Wow, good work. Well, wow.
It's highly it's highly probable that you've received a vaccine he developed. 8 of the 14 vaccines, including MMRR, recommended on the current US vaccine schedules, were developed by him and his team. He developed vaccines for Japanese B encephalitis during World War II, the measles, the mumps, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, streptococcus pneumonia, rubella, not to be confused with German measles, and meningitis, to name just a few. He wasn't just a brilliant microbiologist. He also understood the politics, bureaucracy, and the business of vaccine production. It was through his work in the private sector that he was able to get his vaccines to market. He famously quipped that it was politics that determined what breakthroughs were brought to market. This guy.
Amazing, man. Well done, Maurice Hillerman. Well done.
Yeah, yeah. He's got all these interesting stories. I love the story about, there's this one where his daughter called him. She was not feeling well. And so he goes over to see his daughter. And he takes a swab and a sample from the back of her throat, goes back to the lab. Turns out she has, I can't remember if it was mumps or rubella or one of these famous ones, right? And he goes and figures out the vaccine for it. Like,
it's incredible. Just incredible.
And anecdotally, apparently, he was saying that, he passed away in 2005, he was saying that, or others have said that, like, it just wouldn't have been possible today with all the regulations. Like, he would just push through all these, like, cures, basically, you know?
Yeah.
And his genius was being able to work through the politics of it all. Yeah, I think he had something to do. Yeah, I think he had something to do too with like the whole, like using eggs. He grew up on a farm, so using eggs as a way to
medium for the vaccines.
Yeah, exactly. That was. I think that had something to do with him too. But don't quote me on that. But anyways, yeah.
Oh, that's incredible. You know, in Canada, immunization is not mandatory, but in Ontario, New Brunswick, and Manitoba to a lesser degree, schools require immunization proof for kids to attend. Although this requirement can be bypassed for ideological reasons, if there is an outbreak, the unvaccinated kids can be refused entry into a school. Fortunately, vaccine compliance is quite high in Canada, anywhere from 84 to 92%, depending on where you are, of kids, for example, are vaccinated. Vaccine legislation falls under the purview of the province. In Alberta, where I'm at, for example, healthcare workers working with babies and new or expectant mothers must be immunized against rubella. And certain private sector healthcare sectors, like long-term care homes, have mandated certain vaccines as a condition of employment.
In the rest of the world, there are as many different requirements as there are countries. Vaccine compliance is high in most of the world, with the global average standing at over 80% for one-year-olds being vaccinated. In the US, states legislate on vaccine requirements for kids and require vaccinations for children to attend school. But religious exemptions are accepted in almost all states. Many states, however, will not recognize philosophical or ideological objections, but only religious ones. That's just insane, right? So it's like saying my religion based on, you know, whatever, supernatural beliefs, like most religions, says I can't have a vaccine and that's okay, but I don't want to get a vaccine because I don't believe in them or I'm against modern medicine and that's not okay.
Where does the law come down on whether vaccines can be mandated or not?
Let's go with the U.S. laws on this. So
okay.
There's a famous landmark ruling in 1905 over vaccines that's withstood the test of time. So nobody's challenged it. It hasn't been overturned or anything like that. The ruling essentially allowed the state and therefore its police powers to mandate vaccinations above and beyond any religious or other objections in the case of an epidemic as the health and welfare of the state trumps religious or other freedoms. Basically, when push comes to shove, the law can and will mandate compulsory vaccinations. By the way, I'm just going to say, I think the one state that doesn't recognize it's mandated is California. Religious or whatever, there's no exemptions whatsoever.
You're going to get the shot.
You want to go to school? You want your kids going in? I met someone here in Canada once, this lady who moved back here. She had a six-year-old boy and she was in California and she had a problem with him getting vaccinated. And so she moved back here where it's not mandated.
Wow. Which, once we get this COVID thing nailed down, I think it's going to be you get the shot or you do not. You're out. Like, well, so you don't get...
It's very hard to enforce, right? So even that ruling, right? It doesn't mean the state could conduct forced vaccinations. It's an impossible... So you can't... In an open society, you just can't do it. It's an impossible task to say that you're getting a jab in your arm.
You're going to get a jab. Yeah, true, true.
It's not going to happen, right?
Right.
But it does mean it can enforce rules that exclude unvaccinated individuals from societal participation, including...
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, you can't get on a plane. You need a vaccine passport, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, can't go to
transport,
a movie.
Nope.
Can't get into a restaurant.
Schools. So this lady that I was talking to, like, there was no, like, she's an anti-vaxxer, like, you know, straight up anti-vaxxer. No amount of facts, by the way, will change her position.
But as you said before, Ray, we do fortunately live in a free society. So at that time, that was her call to make.
In certain U.S. states. Whenever there have been outbreaks, the state has moved in to repeal religious or other objections. And so there's lots of cases of that. So history repeatedly shows that, you know, even in open society, when an epidemic is underway and lives are threatened, individual rights will not trump the well-being of society at large. Not going to happen.
Depending on the vaccine, a certain percentage of people need to be vaccinated for herd immunity to be effective. If the percentage of the immunized slips, herd immunity decreases, leaving a population more exposed. Herd immunity varies by vaccine. For example, 92 to 95% for the measles virus and 33 to 60% for Ebola.
Wow. Yeah, essentially, the vaccinated protect not just themselves, but also the unvaccinated.
Yes, yeah, that's true. The unvaccinated, because they are far more likely to contract the disease or to pass it on to vulnerable people or those who cannot be vaccinated.
Yeah, that's what I understand from all this, is that, like, society and the state will have a certain amount of patients, but if that threshold drops below a certain acceptable point, then it gets more serious. Unfortunately, social media has played a big role in giving a voice to false facts relating to vaccines. Fortunately, the tech giants are now taking some responsibility for what they allow on their platforms. This, however, brings into question censorship and the role of big tech. It's a slippery slope trying to regulate what can and cannot be posted.
Very true. We need to do more to call out fake news and false information.
Yeah, no doubt. There's a difference between the vaccine hesitant crowd and the dead set anti-vaxxers crowd. Whereas the hesitants may change their minds, it's not possible to reason with people that ignore facts, mistrust science and doctors, or believe that the government has a nefarious agenda. There are, of course, risks to vaccines, but anti-vaxxers miscalculate the risk-to-reward ratio of getting a vaccine versus catching a debilitating disease. Like anti-maskers and climate change deniers, most of their opposition is due to misconceptions. More bluntly, they're grossly misinformed. They use incorrect data, if at all, to do a proper risk-reward calculation. Whether it's a belief in only using homeopathic medicine or that vaccines cause autism, which has been soundly debunked, it's everyone's right to believe whatever they want, right or wrong. But as the 1905 smallpox Jacobson versus Massachusetts ruling in the US has demonstrated, society won't tolerate a return to a pre-vaccine world.
Get this. In the UK in the 1700s, prior to the smallpox vaccine, 3,000 per million died of smallpox. By the 1800s, with the optional vaccination, that number had dropped to 417 per million died. A few years later, with the compulsory vaccination, that number dropped again from 3,000 per million dying to only 214 per million. By the time vaccines were enforced in 1890, that number dropped to 10 per million. There's no arguing with those numbers in that science, Ray. No anti-vaxxers can argue with that.
That's really interesting. I mean, that's how smallpox was eventually eradicated. By the way, measles, a potentially deadly disease, was declared eradicated in the US in 2002. In 2014, however, a measles outbreak of over 600 people was directly attributed to parents refusing to vaccinate their children.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anti-vaccine parents, some of whom are otherwise quite educated, by the way, have helped fuel mumps, measles, and other outbreaks around the world. Fortunately, if an epidemic threat is serious or there is an outbreak, the state and the public acts. This is thanks to the majority position that hold the view that vaccines are necessary.
Hey, we're doing some fact fun again this week. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Okay. The seasonal flu kills 0.01% to 0.02% of infected individuals. COVID-19 kills significantly more, anywhere from 5 times to 10 times to 15 times. It's difficult with like getting an accurate number because of different factors like age, location. But anyway, an example is Mexico, for example, where 9% of recorded COVID cases died as of 2021.
Oh, that's huge. God.
So yeah, 0.1 to 0.2% versus 9% in Mexico.
That's huge numbers. Didn't Mexico have the highest obesity rate in the world? It's probably connected, you think? Get this. The Ukraine is the most anti-vaxxer country in the world. 29%, almost 30%, think they are safe without vaccines. They had 57,000 measles cases in 2019. In this day and age, 57,000. A disease that had been eradicated in most Europe, most European countries since 2002. And in 2019, these guys had 57,000 cases. Cases of diphtheria and polio have also been reported. Wow, Georgia, the country, is not far behind. That is really sad. And just from a position of just not knowing better. Like, come on, read some this information. That's just, you can't argue with those numbers. Wow.
The 1968 Hong Kong flu pandemic killed 15% of Hong Kong's population, 500,000, and between 1 and 4 million people globally. Maurice Hilleman, he developed the vaccine for this that would save countless lives here. His team also developed a vaccine from the previous Asian flu pandemic, which was pretty major, in 1957.
Wow. We're close to eradicating polio, and we could eradicate other diseases also. We're really close.
Yeah, that's good news. You've heard about the bubonic plague, or the Black Death, as it's called, of 1346. But the plague of Justinian, same bacteria as the Black Death, by the way, in 541 CE, was equally horrific. It decimated the Byzantine Empire. It's possible that 40 to 50% of the population of Constantinople alone died. Wow. The geopolitical implications were massive. The deaths were so numerous that land could not be farmed nor grains transported. The economy was ruined and tax revenue severely diminished. Reunification with the Western Empire likely would have lasted longer had the plague not struck. Certainly, history in the present would look very different. How about this? Viruses are not living organisms, but bacteria are. Viruses lay dormant and require a host cell before they live and reproduce. Bacteria are gigantic compared to viruses. Viruses are submicroscopic, and so you need an electron microscope to view viruses. Viruses, this is so bizarre, man. Viruses can actually infect bacteria.
Wow.
Like, yeah, like, it's not interesting. Anyways, pneumonia, TB, tetanus, and food poisoning are all bacteriological. AIDS, measles, influenza, and COVID are viral. They're viruses.
HPV, hepatitis A and B, are the only STDs that can be prevented by vaccines. Fortunately, antibiotics and penicillin have been effective in treating the other STDs.
Beats injecting mercury, which is how it used to be treated.
Yeah, crazy. Can you imagine getting mercury injected into you?
Yeah. No. Here's another astonishing statistic. By 1800, tuberculosis had killed one, or it used to be called consumption also. By 1800, tuberculosis had killed one out of every seven human beings that had ever lived.
That an ancient is and nasty disease. Massive. That is it huge. Is. Oh my gosh. One in seven. That is
That's
a
right.
Huge.
That had ever lived.
Ever lived. 15% of the population gone like that. 15% gone like that. Wow. Here's another one. After China published the genetic sequence for COVID-19 in January 2020, Moderna and the National Institute of Health were able to design a highly effective vaccine 2 days later. Getting the vaccine approved, plus the manufacturing, et cetera, is what took the time. 2 days, that's mind-blowing, considering it took us so many years previous, right? Here's another one. In 1974, only 5% of the world's children were immunized against the six most common killers of diseases. Today, 86% of the world's children are immunized. That's fantastic.
That is fantastic. Progress. It's good. That does it for this week. Thank you very much, Spencer.
No, Ray, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to all our awesome and growing community of listeners. New shows every Wednesday. For comments, fire off an email to info@vancouvercurrent.com. Have a great rest of your day wherever you are.